to thank everyone for their indulgence and obviously their intention. Attendance today. Kleinsel in general, and especially the Los Angeles community, we're very fortunate that we have a number of Talmidei Chachamim leaders who lead the community in our quest to come closer to Hashem. And a number of them are unique because not only their scholarship and their midos tovos and other things, but also they're unique because they are beloved. And as we mentioned in keynote, sometimes a leader has to say something that is not popular and maybe people don't want to hear. So if people realize that it comes, the message comes from a source, a point of love, so then hopefully the message is received. We are fortunate that we have, I believe, three such examples who will speak for us today. And the first, of course, we have to thank him for every year, not only what he does for the community, but also that to come and speak on Tisha B'Av is obviously not an easy task, and he willingly does so. The Menahel of Or Eliyahu Yeshivas, Aaron Yaakov, Rabbi Goldberg, of course, is someone who's been in his yeshiva for many years. And one, as I mentioned before, the greatest compliment I feel I could give to someone in his position is that he is beloved. People love him. And therefore, they entrust their children with him. And they're willing to listen to advice and guidance, which maybe sometimes they didn't think of. So to speak to us on the topic of crying of all generations, which I have to mention is, to show you how beloved it is sponsored by the Kirschberg and the Schenker family, two satisfied customers, so to speak. It's an honor that we have Rabbi Goldberg, Rabbi Shlomo Goldberg, address us.
Thank you, Rabbi Summers, for a very kind introduction. If what Rabbi Summers said about me is true, I would say that it's because it takes one to know one. And that for sure is true. I chose to speak today about the subject of tears, crying in tears, for a few reasons. One, as we'll see, that it's a chazal, which Rabbi Summers mentioned at the beginning of his words on the kinos today. That's one reason. Also, the words bechi, crying, and dimaos, tears, are perhaps, if we did a search, we would find that they were probably the two most common words found in the kinos. And thirdly, is because I'm a person who cries easily. So I figured that I would try to find a reason to justify that. And hopefully that by finding some definitions of tears and crying and the source of it on this day, that we will be able to get an insight that will help us not just for the understanding of those concepts, but something that can help us a little bit practically in the future as well. We'll take a look at the first of the Mara Makomos. This day, Tisha B'Av, we know that of all the tremendous tragedies that befell us over these thousands of years, they all began, and perhaps I would suggest all emanated from the original, the seminal event of the sadness of this day, which was the day, or the night actually, of the Chet of the Meraglim. About that particular night, when the Klal Yisrael heard the report of the Meraglim, of the spies, that Eretz Yisrael, despite the bracha that was contained within it, would also contain some significant and almost insurmountable challenges in order to be able to conquer it, it says that the Klal Yisrael cried in their tents. On that, the Gemara says in Tainus, Amar Amar Rabba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. That Rabba said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that night that they cried, Oso Lailo, Leil Tisha B'Av Hayo. That night was the night of Tisha B'Av. So Amar Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to the Klal Yisrael, after they cried, these words, Atem Bechisem Bechia Shel Chinam, you cried a crying that was chinam, which is a word that we will have to explain what that means. But basically it means a senseless, unwarranted crying. You cried for nothing. The Gemara continues and says, Va'ani koveil lechem b'chil l'doros. I will establish it, I will be koveya, I will fix for you a crying for all generations. And it's interesting to note that it doesn't say l'fikach, therefore, ani koveya lechem b'chiyu l'doros. The Chazal say, you cried a b'chiyu shel chinam, and ani koveya lechem b'chiyu l'doros. It seems that it's a type of natural, automatic consequence. That crying, and the senselessness of the crying, and we'll have to figure out what the senselessness was, seems to have resulted in the fact that whatever that crying is going to be with us for a long time. So in order to understand it seemed to me that we have to define a few terms. One of the terms that we have to define is bechiyah. What does crying mean? And what does it do? And what is its source? And secondly, eventually we will have to define the word chinam, for nothing. Because as Rabbi Summers mentioned earlier this morning, to the naked eye, it doesn't seem that it was a bechiyah shel chinam. They were facing giants, powerful people. I went on a tour one time to the archaeological digs outside of Hebron, where they unearthed the stones that were from the time before Bais Rishon. And the stones were huge. The stones were of immense proportions. So when Chazal tell us, and the Pesukim tell us, that there were giants who lived there, if you take a look at what they built, and this was a long time ago, John Deere did not exist. There were giants there. And people came back and said, okay, the fruits, true, we were promised, but it ain't going to be easy. So it doesn't sound chinam. It doesn't sound like it was for nothing. So I think that word also needs a bit more of an explanation. So let's take a look. What does it mean to cry? So just as an aside, if you need to find out the definition of a word from a Torah in a Torah context, Lashon Kodesh is different than all other languages of the world. The Sefer HaKuzari says that all other languages, the reason that we call any particular object that name was just haskamas, it was an agreement amongst the people who live in that culture. So we decided to call a lectern or a chair, but it doesn't have necessarily any particular insight into the nature of the object. But he said, Lashon Kodesh is different, and that if we know the definition, if we get to the shorish of a word, it tells us about the essence of the thing. There are three, which help to understand definitions of words in Lashon Kodesh. One is the Perush of Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, and there is someone recently who put together, and if I'm saying it right, etymological dictionary, where you can look up by the root and find out how Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch describes the meaning of any particular root. Another is the Malbim. And the third is the Sefer HaKesava HaKabbalah, who, in an effort to fight against the reformists, actually all three of them, made an effort to show the unity of the Torah Shebiksav and the Torah Shebaal Peh, and used the Yesod of the Lashon Kodesh in order to be able to show that innate unity. So in his discussion of the word crying, the K'sava HaKabbalah, in the second of the sources, says the following. And it's a tremendous insight. He says the Paul Bechi, the root word, the verb Bechi, to cry, livchot, humi gezeras boch, which is the basic two-letter root, is Beis and Chaf. Asher yore al devar meturaf umebubal. The root of the word bocheh is from the word navuch, which means something which is torn and confused. A person doesn't know where to turn. A person doesn't know what to do. A person who has a solution, who has a derech, who knows a path to proceed upon, that person does not cry. The Ksav HaKabbalah says a person cries because he is meturaf and mebubal. He is confused and does not know what to do. And he says, V'habechiyah hu hisgalus ha-mevuche shebelev. Crying is a revelation of the confusion in the heart. V'hara'osay l'chutz. And it is being displayed externally. Al yidei haramas kol, by raising one's voice. V'horedes dimo'os, and by having tears fall. But it is an expression of confusion, lack of knowledge that exists, perplexity, that which exists in a person's heart. And he says, V'hu einu inyan hanase b'kavano. Crying, he said, is not something that happens intentionally. Ki im behechrich tivi. It's an involuntary response. Haba mihargoshes tsar v'yogon, which comes from a deep feeling of a person's pain and difficulty, oh, simcha yisera, or by having extra joy, a person will also come to cry. And he actually goes on to explain there that when a person is in the midst of the emotion, the blood, he says, is so to speak, trapped in the heart. And when a person is in the midst of that extreme emotion, he can't cry and he can't call out. But once the moment passes, and again the blood is able to flow, then the crying and the calling out is a type of catharsis that allows him to show externally the tremendous concern and lack of knowledge and perplexity and confusion and tiruf that he was feeling on the inside. And it seems that that type of confusion, we are most accustomed to it happening at a time of difficulty, but the Ksav HaKabbalah says that it can happen also at a time when a person experiences great joy. Which is a little bit of a kasha on something that I've always felt, because when things don't go well, so we often have confusion and we say, why me? But I never really knew anybody who, when they won the lottery, to say, why me? They usually feel, what took so long? But it seems that if a person is honest, and the reason that we do cry from times of great joy is because we're overwhelmed. We're confused and overwhelmed. And that leads a person to tears. The Rambam has a sefer, Moreh Nevuchim. It's a guide for people who are confused. It's usually translated as perplexed. Perplexed connotes that it's just intellectual. Navuch means confused, that we don't know how to go. I would suggest that if crying comes from having a lack of direction and not knowing where to go or what to do, if we are in the year 2011, it would seem to me that we have to be prepared, you know, unfortunately, for some tears. Because if we take a look, we see that nobody really knows what to do. And any place that we thought that we could look to for direction, at least in the world at large, any institution that we thought that we could trust, including the Holy of Holies, full faith and credit of the United States of America, is something that you can't rely on anymore. And not only that, as far as the political world goes, there's not a single person who has any idea of how to get out of it. People profess to have ideas, but there's not a single person who really knows what they're doing. Back in the days when Henry Kissinger was the Secretary of State of the United States, he said the thing that concerned him the most about the world was that there was nobody in charge. And there was no direction. Because if a person has direction, okay, at least, you know, you have a way to go. But nobody was in charge, and nobody has any direction. And the more the years go by, it seems that the problems increase, the challenges increase, and the real sense of leadership doesn't seem to be there, certainly in the world, in the regular world, doesn't seem to be there. And therefore, when Chazal said be'ikvasa de Mashiach, before Mashiach comes, people will say, "Ein al mi lehisha ein, ella al avinu shevashamayim." That we'll have no one that we can rely on except for Hashem. That if we needed more proof, what greater proof do we need for the nevuah, the Ruach HaKodesh of Chazal, than for them to tell us that there's going to come a time when every person will realize that all of the political and social and economic institutions that we have zero answers. Ve'ein al mi lehisha'ein, el avinu shebashamayim. Tears come when we're confused. Tears come when we're facing a problem, strong emotion, and we don't know what to do. That confusion is rooted in the word boche, navuch, confusion and tears. In number three, the Ksav HaKabbalah explains the word dimos, perhaps the second most commonly used word in the kinos. Bechi means crying, dimos are tears. And he understands that word in the same way as bechi. And he says, "V'hu shem dimo asher hunach al tipiyos halachiyos hanigrorim min haboiche." Dimos, he says, refer to the drops of moisture which are pulled from the crier. Amnam, in truth, he says, "Ein ikar v'yisod haraoso hadazilo." Even though dimos refer to the flow of tears, but the major word dima does not mean flowing. Raktamsis hara'oso, but the essence of its use is bilbul umevuchas das habeiche. It is the confusion and the mevuchas das, the mental confusion of the person who is crying. Hamizgalu, which is revealed, that confusion is revealed ba'ayin, in the eye, al yedei tipos lachios eila, through these moist drops that come from his eye. But again, is a manifestation of an inner confusion. Kemosha shorish bacha gam kein hunach al hisgalus hamavucha. Just like crying also refers to this concept of confusion, the tears also, he says, refer to this sense of lack of knowledge of what to do. And then he brings a proof and he says, therefore we find that our sages who were experts in the Lashon Kodesh, gam, they use the word dima, gam al bilbul v'ta'aruvos hatruma b'toch hachulin. If there was truma, that was a tithe that was taken, which needed to be eaten by a kohen, and that truma was mixed in with regular produce, chulin, which did not have the kedusha, that combination, that bilbul, that confusion, that mixture of truma and chulin, for karuhu, it was referred to in the Lashon of Chazal as meduma. It was called meduma. A mixture of kedusha with chulin. We don't know what it is. We don't know how to treat it. We don't know how to respond to it. It has the same root as dima, tears, which come from a person facing a life situation that leaves him perplexed and confused, without direction and insight, without knowing what to do. And the Malbim follows that same approach. And he says, in the Pasuk in Yeshaya, he says, Mevucha means Yedua. Mevucha means Hatoa Beliderech, a person who is wandering without a path. Hanavuch, who is confused, Beli Eitza. And he has no counsel. No one to advise him, no path to follow. As Paro said about the Klal Yisrael, when they come out of Mitzrayim and then seem to be wandering before they came through the Yamsuf, Nevuchim hem ba'aretz, they are confused in the land. Now we can get them. Because they don't know where they're going, they don't know what to do. So I don't know how you feel about these words of the Malbim and the Ksav HaKabbalah, but for me they were extremely insightful. And we really do find ourselves in a time, and if we look at the times when we cry, when we face a tragedy, we face a difficulty, it's okay, the situation itself is painful, but one of the things that makes it so painful and brings us to tears is that it takes away the foundation of our understanding. Of we thought we had a path. We thought we knew what we were doing. We thought there were things that we could rely on. And now it seems that everything that we thought was firm and had structure and that we could rely upon and that we could follow, we seem it's been taken away from us and we're brought to tears. An external manifestation of confusion in the heart and in the mind. That's Bechiyah. Dima'os, it's a mixture. We don't know how to handle it. We don't know how to relate to it. We don't know its halacha. So we don't know what to do. There's still a question of why it is that this type of expression of confusion is shown through the act of tears coming from a person's eye. That it's true that Bechi involves really two things. There's the haramas kol, there's raising up of a voice. But Hashem also made it that when people feel this type of confusion, it's shown through tears. What is it about tears? What's the nature of the lesson of tears that confusion brings us to tears? And perhaps there's another message in crying and tears as well. So for that, I would like to turn to the Maharal. The Maharal says, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the fifth of the Maharal. The Maharal says, Amar Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer said, Kol hamagaresh es ishtay rishayna. Anyone who divorces his first wife, afilu mizbeach moirid olov dimos. Even the mizbeach, even the altar in the Beis HaMikdash sheds tears over the event. We're Jewish people. We're not Catholics. There is a parsha in the Torah of Gittin. There's a Masechta Gittin. Rabbi Aaron Cutler said sometimes Shalom Bayis means two batim, means there needs to be two houses. Yet, the Gemara does say that if the event happens, then afilu mizbeach morid olov dimos, that the illusion that the Chazal wanted to use for the Shekhinah's feeling was that of crying tears. And the Maharal explains why. He says, ki ha-hefsed, ki hefsed chibur v'dibuk zeh. Because the loss of this connection and clinging, sheyesh bein ish v'ishto, that exists between a man and his wife, hu chibur be'etzim, that is a fundamental and intrinsic unity. Shekach nivro'u, because that's the way, that was Hashem's original intent for husband and wife, v'hayolo basar echot, and they should be as one flesh. They should be basar echot. V'devar zeh nekshav hefsed lemizbeach, and if one divorces his first wife, then it's considered to be a loss to the mizbeach. Shehu gam kein chibur bein ish li isha kamosha amarnu, because that's also a loss between husband and wife, as the Maharal explained, the husband being Hakadosh Baruch Hu, and the wife being Knesset Yisrael. The mizbeach was also a place of chibur and dibuk. It was a place of connection between Shemayim and Oretz. It was a place of connection between Hashem and the Jewish people. So just as the connection between husband and wife is a chibur be'etzem, it's an essential and fundamental connection, so too is the one that exists between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Klal Yisrael. So when the first, in the case of Megaresh Ishto Rishona, when that happens, when that chibur is broken, the expression of Chazal is that Hashem feels and He cries tears, because it's also somehow equated to the connection between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Klal Yisrael, which is also an intrinsic connection. Ulekach, and therefore the Maharal says, Omar mizbeach moirid olov dimo'os, the mizbeach sheds tears upon him, ki hadimo'os heim hefsed luboche. Because the point of tears, according to the Maharal, is that they show loss. In the case that we're talking about here, there was a loss of a chibur be'etzem.
The Mizbeach, which had a sense of connection also, is Yoyred Dimo'os. It feels a sense of loss. And the Maharal says in a very brilliant way, why is it shown through tears? Because tears are a loss to the eye of the person who cries them. So since crying is essentially an expression of a sense of loss, the way that it's shown is by having something exude, something be lost from the body of the person who's crying. We've lost something. Just like these tears have gone out and will never come back, so too in many situations, unfortunately, that we face in life, we cry because we feel the sense of loss. We know that it can't be replaced. Hadimo'os hem hefsed l'boicha. Tears are a sign of loss to the person who cries them. Ki ka'asher megia hamisa, because when death reaches lo adam, when a person experiences lo aleinu death, of echad kroivim, one of his close relatives, shehim basar mi basaro, that they are the flesh of his flesh, the response of a person who is an ovel rachmano latzlan is boichin alav. They cry upon him. Ki ha-hefzed zeh shayich lo ka'asher higia la'oso shehu atzmai u'besaro. Because it's a personal loss, because there was a connection between that person who passed away and those who, of us who remain, who are feeling the loss. U'lekach mori dimo'os, and therefore we cry. Shehu hefzed. Because that shows that we feel the loss. So on Tisha B'Av, it's a time of tears. It's the national day of crying. It's a day that we are supposed to reflect back and think about what's been lost. There's a yard site. There's a time of yizkor. We think about those who are close to us and we don't have them anymore. So we feel a sense of loss. We're supposed to shed tears for the tzaddikim who have passed on and for the Beis HaMikdash which has passed on. And the reason that we're supposed to cry tears is because we're supposed to be feeling a sense of loss. If we have trouble crying over it, it's because we don't have a realization that we really lost anything. Everything looks quite fine. And perhaps even we feel that things are a little bit better and a little bit easier. So I explained to one of my children, when the Beis HaMikdash gets rebuilt, not only are we going to have to worry about kashrus, we're going to have to worry about tuma and tahara. Not only are you going to have to worry about what you eat, but you're going to have to worry about where you sit. You can't just take that seat on the airplane. We're worried about, do I want a window seat or an aisle seat? I would like a tahor seat, please. There's going to be a lot to think about. And maybe really in our hearts, we're, you know, korbanos. So we don't cry over it because maybe if we're really honest with ourselves, we're a little bit, you know, I'm okay with the fact that, you know, I have enough. With, you know, there's enough halachas, I don't know. You're going to throw tuma and tahara and kachrim, you're going to throw that at me too? But it's a loss. And we have to feel the loss. In yesterday's Shir Shal Yom, we said that Yerushalayim was referred to as Mesos Kol Ha'aretz. You know what Mesos Kol Ha'aretz means? Happiest place on earth. Okay, that's the translation. Okay? Mesos Kol Ha'aretz means happiest place on earth. Okay? So do I have to say more? You know why it was happiest place on earth? Because that's where a person went to get a kapara. That's why. That even if you made a mistake, there was a place that you could go to fix it. Mesos kol ha'aretz. Not Mickey Mouse. Mesos kol ha'aretz. In the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so there was a figure of a young man and a young woman, and when the Kohen HaGadol went in on Yom Kippur and he saw the Urim Zeh L'Zeh, he was able to see that they were in an embrace. So that showed that the chibah, the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had for the Klal Yisrael. They saw a red flag And then when the Sir HaMishtaleach went over the hill and the Kohen Gadol finished his avoda, that the red turned to white. Happiest place on earth. But what do we think? I have to, I'm worried. Hey, I want an aisle seat. I want a window seat. I don't want to worry about, can I sit? So maybe we don't cry, because we don't really realize what was lost. But if we really realized that that was the place of joy that emanated in the world, that the Gemara says every physical pleasure that your human being had, we do not really understand how good it feels since there's no Beis HaMikdash. The most delicious fruit you might think of eating, if you ever tasted, no Beis HaMikdash, it doesn't taste like anything. So we lost. Even in a physical sense, we lost. But we don't feel it so much, and therefore we sometimes have trouble crying. But when something strikes us, when something was basar mibasari, when it was flesh of our flesh, if it was a relative, it was a close friend, it was something that we felt a connection to, something we were united with, something that we had that close connection, and it's taken from us, so we cry. The Malbim says, because we're showing that just like my body has lost liquid through the tears, that my soul has lost something as well. So from the Maharal and from the Ksav HaKabbalah and the Malbim, we see that there's two basic understandings of what crying and tears are about. One is about confusion, a catharsis of feeling that expresses the inner emotional and mental confusion that people feel when they have no derech to follow and there's no one who can give them good advice. There was a particular Rav, I don't remember who it was, during the Holocaust, who, when he wasn't sure whether he should flee or whether he should stay, was he supposed to throw himself into the hands of the Russians or into the hands of the Nazis? It wasn't so clear. So he was pacing up and down in his room, and he said, where does a person go to get Ruach HaKodesh b'zman hazeh? Where do you go for Netzah? And the greatest people didn't really know. There was a Jew who lived in this city, that he was a Talmud of Rav Avram Grudzinski, the last Mashgiach of Slobodka. He learned in Slobodka at the time of the Torah Avraham. And he said, he asked him before the war, should I flee to America or should I stay? He says, and the Mashgiach told him, stay. He didn't listen. And he came to Los Angeles and he raised a family. People didn't know. The greatest people didn't know. We face situations in our life, and my fear is that we're going to be facing them more and more, because I don't see us getting smarter. I just see the world getting a lot more confusing, a lot more bilbul hadas, a lot more tiruf hadas, and fewer places to go to get good solid etza about what to do and how to proceed. That, and a sense of loss, and part of the loss, as Rabbi Summers alluded to, at the beginning of the 3 weeks, to lose three Gedolei Yisrael. Yeah. They're the people that you go to get some advice, to get a derech. And there's fewer and fewer to go to. It's a concern. Chazal said that the Leil Tishrei B'Av was a Bichia Shel Chinam, Vani Koveo Lechem Bichia L'Doros. If crying means confusion and crying means loss, then it would stand to reason that we would find at the time of the Meraglim, we would also find those two elements. Since it was a Bichia and Hashem was Koveo Bichia L'Doros, we would also find confusion and loss. And perhaps the greatest loss being the loss of knowledge and clarity, which leads to confusion. So just on the sense of loss, before we go forward, the Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Kuf, Tav Kuf Samech, that since crying is for a sense of loss, and loss relates to the Beis HaMikdash, that the Shulchan Aruch paskins, Mishachar of Beis HaMikdash, Tiknu Chachamim Shiyu Ba'oso Hador, the rabbis of that generation were Masakin, She'ein Bonim Le'olam Binyan Mesuyad U'Mechuyar K'Binyan Mahamalachim. You shouldn't build a beautifully painted and perfectly adorned house. That you can paint it and you can plaster it, but you have to leave a zecher l'chorban, a sign, ama al ama. It's a beautiful house. Everything is there. It's perfectly put together, but there's something missing. There's a little place which doesn't have the plaster and doesn't have the paint. In Sif Beis, v'kein hiskinu shaha erich shulchan la'asai suda la'orchim. I saw that Reb Nevensal, the Rav Yerushalayim, holds that we are not nohig to do this, but it is a halach in Shulchan Aruch. This is not a minhag so much b'zman hazeh. That they were mesakin also that when a person sets his table for guests, mechaser mimenu ma'at, you leave a little bit off. U'meiniach mokom ponui b'lo ka'aro min ha'ka'aros haru'uyos lo se'sham. Don't set a full table. And leave a seat open that nobody's sitting at. Because there's no Beis HaMikdash, so there's no perfect table. And when a woman puts on her jewelry of gold and silver, she should leave off one of the pieces of jewelry that she would normally wear, so that it shouldn't be that she's perfectly and completely adorned. Because there's no Beis HaMikdash. And we cry because we're feeling that something's missing. Back to the Meraglim. In the seventh of the Mara Makomos, the Pasuk says, as Moshe Rabbeinu recounted it in the Mishnah Torah, last week's Parsha, he says, Re'ei si nosan Hashem elokecho lefonecho es ha'oretz. Because you see, Hashem gave you Eretz Yisrael. Alei, go up, rush, inherit it, ka'asher diber, Hashem, elokei avosecho loch. As Hashem, the Lord your God, said to you, the God of your fathers, al tiro, don't be afraid, v'al techas, and don't lose your resolve. Have courage, go forward, inherit the land. Hashem promised them it would be okay. Next pasuk. V'tikruvun alai kulchem. And you all came close to me. Rashi, and they were requesting spies to go and check out the land. Rashi, v'tikruvun alai kulchem, and you all approached me. Zot Rashi be'uvuvia, with confusion. You approached me with confusion. Hashem just told them, go inherit the land. Yeah, I promised it to your fathers. It's going to be good. What is their response? V'tikruvun alai kulchem, we need to send Meraglim. How did they approach Be'irvuvia? Rashi says, Yolodim doichefin es hazakenim. The young people pushed aside the older people, the zakenim, and the elder people, doichefin es haroshehem. They pushed away their leaders. It was a tumult. They heard that they were going into the land. Hashem had shown he could be relied upon. What's their response? Confusion. We have to try to figure out what was the confusion. Simple Peshat, Rashi says, they wanted to know Es HaDerech Asher Naleba, which is the path that we should take up there. More confusion. Ein Derech She'ein Ba Akmumius. There's no path that doesn't have twists and turns. Not every path is straight. So we have to spend out spies to figure out how we're going to go, because it could be a confusing path. There's no derech that doesn't have twists and turns and detours. So they were confused. Hashem said to go, but which path? I said, could we go? How are we going to go? And I think we're going to see that there was a deeper confusion, a deeper concern as well. When they made this request, amazingly enough, Moshe Rabbeinu agrees. Next pasuk, Vayitav be'enai, that Moshe says it was good in my eyes, hadavar. Made sense to me. Vakach mikhem shneim asar anoshim ish echad l'shevet, and I took from you 12 men, one from each shevet. The Sephorno is perplexed. Why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu thought that this was a good idea? So Moshe, the Sephorno explains that Moshe thought, Ki chashavti shelo hayosafek etzlechem b'devar hakel yisborach, shetich v'shu ha'oretz v'shehi toivo. It never entered my mind that you had anything but total confidence in the fact that Hashem could conquer the land and that it was a good land. I thought that was clear. I don't think you had any doubts or confusion about that. You were just trying to figure out which would be the best portion for you to go in first. The idea was a good idea. Hashem will conquer the people who are living in the country. It's a good land. That I thought you had clear. It's just that you had a suffix about which was exactly the right way to go into the land. So therefore, v'yitav be'inai, it was good in Moshe Rabbeinu's eyes. Which means that the confusion that was inherent in the Klal Yisrael, which caused them to push the younger, to push the older, and the older to push the leaders, and the lack of knowledge, because they never know a path that doesn't have, you know, twists and turns in it, where this might not be so straight and secure, and the lack of confidence they had in the fact that Hashem would actually bring them into the land, that, according to the Sephorno, was hidden from the eyes of Moshe Rabbeinu, which to me means that it must have been deep. Because Moshe Rabbeinu understood people. And if he thought that they had the basic idea, and if he thought that they trusted in Hashem, and if he thought that we believe you can conquer the land, Hashem, and the land is good, and Moshe didn't see it, it must be that that element of confusion that was within the Klal Yisrael at that time was not something that they were wearing on their sleeves. And therefore we have to take a deeper look to find out what was the lack and what was the confusion. So if you take a look at 9, a few psukim later, after the spies came back and they gave their evil report, so it says, V'tiroganu v'olalechem, and you mumbled and murmured and complained in your tents, V'toimru, and you said, B'sinas Hashem osanu hotzionu mi'eretz Mitzrayim. The reason that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim was because He hates us. He hates us. It's B'sinas Hashem osanu hotzionu. He hates us. That's why He took us out of Mitzrayim. And He took us out of Eretz Mitzrayim to hand us over to the Emori in order to totally destroy us. You know why He did all these things for us? Because He hates us. It's hard to say. Yeah. Hashem hated them. Rashi. B'sinas Hashem osanu. Hashem hated us. Rashi, who to my knowledge did not study psychology, says the following, V'hu haya ohev eschem. So you thought Hashem hated you? He loved you. Aval atem sonim oso. But you projected your feelings on Him. You hated Him. And therefore, you said, He hates me. So now, we're talking deep. He hated them. They hated Hashem, and therefore they said He hates us. Yeah. The Sephorno. Why did they say B'sinas Hashem osanu? You know why Hashem hates us? Al ma she'avadnu avodah zarah b'Mitzrayim. He hates us because we worshipped avodah zarah in Mitzrayim. Therefore, He gives to give us over to the Emori. Yes, we believe He could conquer the Emorim, lahamisom, and He could kill them out. Still, yitain osanu biyodom lihinakim. He's going to give us over to the Emorim to take revenge on us because we were not loyal to Him in misery. And therefore, they felt that He hates us. Remember Rashi saying, really, they hated Him. And what kind of reasoning is this? From the time that they were obeyed avodah zarah in Mitzrayim, what had Hashem done for them? He took them out of Mitzrayim. He split the Yam. He gave them the Man. He gave them the Be'er. Yeah. He gave them the Torah. Yeah. The Chet HaEgel, we worked on that. It wasn't pretty for a while, but they're still around. And now He's going to take revenge on us for what we did in Mitzrayim? It doesn't make any sense that they would forget all the chesed that Hashem did for them through that entire time and say that Hashem hates us. Remember Rashi saying that really, they hated Him. And He hates us because we worshipped avodah zarah in Mitzrayim. Look at all the chesed He did for them. Look how He showed that He forgave them. So I want to suggest that in my current thinking, the only way that I can understand this is to say that even though it might have been in their mind that Hashem forgave them, they didn't forgive themselves. They didn't forgive themselves for what they did. Hashem showed them that He forgave them, but they felt they didn't measure up. Hashem gave them the Torah, split the sea, gave them the man, gave them the be'er, did everything, forgave them after the Chet Ha'egel, Luchos Rishonos, Luchos Shnios. He did everything for them. I said, but you know what? They maybe were not able to get to the feeling that they could finally forgive themselves. So you know what happened? They hated themselves. And since they hated themselves, they hated Hashem. And since they hated Hashem, they didn't want to say they hated Hashem. So it must be that Hashem hates us. And it's a rather terrible circular reasoning. But it started with the feeling that they hate themselves. Number 10. What does it mean, chinam? A bechiya shel chinam. Back in Parshas Baalosocha, it says, "Zacharnu es hadoga asher nochal b'Mitzrayim chinam." When the Klai Yisrael was complaining, they said, "We remember the fish that we ate in Mitzrayim chinam, at no cost, free." Rashi says, "Im toymar sha'Mitzrim nosnim lehem dogim chinam." Do you really think that the Mitzrim gave them the fish for free? V'halo kfar nemar. It already says, "V'teven lo nosan lo yinasem lehem." We're not going to give you teven. We're not going to give you straw. "Im teven lo hayu nosnim lehem chinam." If they wouldn't give them straw for free, dogim hayu nosnim lehem chinam, they were going to give them free fish. What does it mean, the fish we ate free? Rashi says, "Mahu omer chinam." What does chinam mean? Chinam min hamitzvos. We ate the fish in Mitzrayim. We didn't have to make a brocha. We didn't have to walk the walls of kashrus. We didn't have to know all these other things. We could just go ahead and eat the fish. I mean, is it so hard to make a brocha over fish? A shell kol is such a hard brocha to make. It's so complicated to have a kosher fish. Okay? It's, you know, fins and scales. It's not that hard. So I would suggest that the problem of chinam min hamitzvos is that when there's a mitzvah, it means there's a standard. If there's a mitzvah, it means there's an expectation. And if there's an expectation, it means I might not be living up to it. And then even though we know that Hashem understands us and He made us and He has rachmanis for us and He helps us, but we can't live with ourselves because we didn't live up to the standard. And so we hate ourselves. And if we hate ourselves, then we'll hate Hashem. And you don't want to say you hate Hashem, so say Hashem hates me. And Moshe Rabbeinu, that's, you know, it seems from this morning that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't see that. But it started with Besinas Hashem Oisono. It's because Hashem hates us. And we don't want to live up to the standard. We'd like it to be on our terms. Chinam min hamitzvos. If I feel like doing it, I can do it. If I don't feel like doing it, I won't do it. And unfortunately, we forget the truth of the matter, which is that Hashem loves us dearly. And that if we have problems with the Yetzer Hara, so Hashem created that Yetzer Hara. And my fear is that amongst good people like ourselves, sometimes we spend, look, a person needs to do cheshbon and nefesh, and a person needs to do tshuva. And we need to improve. But the only way that that can really happen is if we do it in an atmosphere we know that Hashem loves us. Yeah. There is a cultural phenomenon which exists in our time, which is known as Mishpacha magazine. Not that I ever read it, but if you look at the headlines, so you see a big part of what they talk about over there is people blaming themselves for all the things that went wrong. There's a problem with kids who are off the derech, whose fault is it? It's the parents' fault for bad parenting. It's the school's fault for bad teaching. And there's a problem with Bali Tshuva, and there's a problem sociologically. We have all these people who are learning in Kollel, and there's poverty, and they don't have enough money, and people taking responsibility, and all the other. And everybody's busy pointing the finger at whose fault is all this, you know, that all these things have happened. I have an opinion whose fault it is. Please hear me out, but it's Aaron Cutler's fault. Because for Aaron Cutler, and perhaps Reb David Leibovitz, had he lived, they came to this country and they said, we have to save Torah. And he had a plan. He said, we're going to get everybody into a yeshiva that we possibly can, where they would have merited to learn in yeshiva in Europe or not. But we need to save Torah. Everybody's got to get into a yeshiva. And you know what happened? He was successful beyond his wildest dreams. The biggest yeshiva, Slobodka Yeshiva in Europe, was 500 Talmidim, 400 Talmidim. Okay. Lakewood is, I don't know, 5,000. Lakewood's a city. Mir is a city. It's an unbelievable bracha. You know, for people who came to this country and they saw what it was, and in this period of time, to see what they were able to create, there's more people learning Torah now than any time since Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And it's because some people said, we can do it. They put everybody in yeshiva. You know what? I'll tell you something. Even though it's on tape, not necessarily does everybody belong in yeshiva. And it never was that way in the Klal Yisrael. Some people worked, got jobs, and were koveya itim. And that was okay. You could put it on a shidduch resume, and it was okay. So what's the situation now? It's a problem. But it's a result of our success. It's a war for Torah. And when there's a war for Torah, there are casualties and there is collateral damage. That means there's going to be kids off the derech. It means the educational institutions can't necessarily keep up in quantity or in quality. There's going to be people in the wrong place. There's going to be a lack of counseling. Then there's the Baal Tshuva movement, where you have thousands and tens of thousands of people becoming frum and starting homes. And they went to Yerushalayim, or they were here in Los Angeles, and they saw some nice families. It looks like being married and raising kids looks like a piece of cake. Whenever I go for Shabbos, everybody's in a great mood. The food is wonderful. Nobody tells them that every one of those kids is going to cost you $10,000 to $15,000 a year in tuition. They would be out the door in 2 seconds. Not to mention all the other challenges that come from being married and raising kids. So he learned how to say Baruch Hashem. He learned how to keep Shabbos a little bit. He learned how to keep kosher. Now he's married with a family. So there's problems. But the problems are a result of the success. Hashem loves us. It's a war. What are you supposed to tell the people? Don't become frum. Yeah. Marry a shiksa. Yeah. Don't come in, because I can't really be sure you're 100% fully functioning and stable and have everything you need to really establish. That's din nefashos. So you have all these people coming into yeshiva, all these people coming into Baal Tshuva yeshiva, all the success and the growth of the Klal Yisrael. It's a war. In a war, there are casualties. In a war, there is collateral damage. And I find that most parents I know, and certainly most schools that I know, are doing really basically a pretty good job. They're trying as hard as they can to do the right thing. Everybody's busy hating themselves, and nobody's appreciating, look at how Hashem loves us. There's some problems? Yes, there's real problems. Do we have to approach the problems? Yes, we have to approach the problems. We're doing an okay job. Can we do better? Absolutely. But you know what? You know what caused these problems? Aaron Cutler caused these problems. And his genius. And the Siris Nefesh. He was able to do it. Look around. People who were older, who saw it happen, they can't believe it. Because it's unbelievable. And it's because Hashem loves us. If not, then we hate ourselves. I hate myself. It's not too far from myself to Hashem. I don't want to say I hate Hashem, so I'll say He hates me. And it all gets very confusing. Rabbi Summers mentioned that Erev Tisha B'Av Rabbi Sheitzer Zeit, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So in facing these problems and these situations, you know, I try to check in and think, what would he say? And I don't know exactly, but I know he would say that if you have a problem like this, you got to look inside. That's for sure. Don't be superficial. Look on the inside. And the truth is, the Klal Yisrael is facing problems. I'm talking about the Klal Yisrael. Our people are facing problems and seeing situations which we never dreamed of. Terribleness. You know, very terrible. Things that you didn't hear about since the Churban HaBayis. Of killing a Navi. Of killing Rebbeim. You didn't hear about that. Things that we've heard about, atrocities we can't believe. So I won't read it now, but I ask you to take a look at this statement from Reb Dessler, because it'll tell you to look inside. It'll tell us all to look inside and to see his idea of where it comes from. And one of the things he does say over here is that when a person follows the path of externalities and not looking inside, he says, behold, this path of falsehood is also the path that leads to murder. So if it's happening, if it's out there for us to see, so it means that we have to look inside and try to figure out how to be real. But we have to know that Hashem loves us, and we have to love Him, and we have to love ourselves. There's not too many of us who have the inclination, and to those who have the inclination, nobody has the time to be evil. To be bad. Who's got the time? We don't have the inclination. We're good people. Hashem loves us. We're doing the best that we can. Yes, we have to cry because we're confused. And we live in confusing times. And therefore, we have to wait for the day when Hashem will give us back, as we said at the end of the Haftorah last week, Hashiva Shoftayach Kavarishona. We'll have our judges and our wise people back again who can advise us. And as we daven every day, Hashiva Shofateinu Kavarishona V'yoatzeinu Kavatechila, give us our shoftim, give us our advisors. V'chaser mimenu yogoin v'yanocha. Only by this bracha does it say chaser yogoin v'yanocha, because Chazal tell us there's no simcha k'taras asfekos. There's no pain. There's no joy, rather, than having a doubt resolved. That means there's no pain like being in doubt. So we need leaders and direction who can help us out of the situation. Umloch aleinu ato Hashem levadcho bechesed uverachamim v'tzadikenu b'mishpat. That Hashem rules over us bechesed and rachamim. And we have tzedek and mishpat together. It means that there's kindness in Hashem's judgment. We have to believe He loves us and that the leaders of the Klal Yisrael love us. Otherwise, why go to them for an etzah if they hate me anyway? We got to know they love us. And the way to know that they love us is that we have to know that it's okay, you can love yourself. You're doing a good job. Especially under the circumstances. We live in complicated times. Believe me, when Mashiach comes and we see the Chafetz Chaim and Rabbi Akiva Eger, and he said, you came to shul in Los Angeles, California, 2011. You raised a frum kid in Los Angeles, California, 2011. Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Umori. They're going to stand up for you. It's huge. We can always do better. There's a lot of work to do, don't get me wrong. But it starts from knowing that we love each other. So what's our hope that when we face the confusion and we face the loss? I noticed today that after we said Alei Tzion, which is a mournful, soulful lament of the status of the Klal Yisrael, what do we say, at least in the shul, what do we say immediately afterwards? Ashrei Yoshevei Beisach. On Yisker, say Yisker, and the Shlosh Golem. After we say Yisker, and remember those who we are missing and who we love, what do we say immediately afterwards? Ashrei Yoshevei Beisach. We say on Shabbos, Avarachamim. The martyrs, people who gave their life al Kedushas Hashem, the pain, the loss, what do we say immediately afterwards? Ashrei Yoshevei Beisach. That's what Rabbi Sheitz said. So yes, there's loss. Yes, there's crying. But yes, there needs to be a standard but we should give ourselves confidence that we're trying our best to improve a little bit, to come closer to meeting the standard. It's okay. We're doing okay. It's difficult. It's pain. It's confusion. It's loss. But it's also Ashrei Yoshevei Beisach. And that, I think, is how we can change the kavias of Asman, time for crying, by believing in ourselves and believing in Hashem and believing in each other to a time of Ashrei Yoshevei Beisach.
I thank Rabbi Goldberg for those wonderful, stirring words of Chizuk. Rav Hashem, we should be zochet to those words. Rabbi Graydon will be speaking in 10 minutes. I was asked to make an announcement. Some people don't realize that if they're parked west of Robertson, there's only one side parking. Some people might be parked on the wrong side.